This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. This week we chat with Matt Brown. He shares some of his tips and what him and Andy have been doing lately, playing bridge all over the world. Well, on that side of the world, at least. Let's go listen.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fooks. Gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein.
We've got Matt Brown with us. Geez, half of the company's probably forgotten who he is by now. He's been gone so long. He's still playing for New Zealand later this year. And we thought we'd just catch up and have a chat, see what he's up to while he's overseas. G'day, Matt. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No sleeping for you today. It's Thursday, 8:30 here in NZ. Yep.
We'll be getting up at 10, 11.
it's an early start to your day.
Very, very lazy.
Where are you, Matt?
At the moment, we're in London. Been all over the UK for the past 4 or 5 months, but now hopefully basing in London.
Okay, and you're there for a little while yet? Staying in London for a little while?
Another year and a half, hopefully. Our visa's for 2 years to stay over in the UK.
Right.
Because most people are interested in what you're doing, but we're probably more interested in what you're doing bridge-wise in the UK. Is there much coming up for you?
Strangely enough, not in the UK. We kind of came here to travel, so a lot of the bridge we're playing, we are traveling for. Just played in America in Louisville in one of the nationals there. And the next event we've got, we're going to the Winter Games, which are in the French Alps. We're playing together on that with Peter Gill and his partner Liz Sylvester. And that's in a couple of weeks. But in the UK itself, we haven't played much bridge. We played a tournament when we first arrived in Leeds, just a small congress. And that was pretty fun. Very similar to New Zealand, apart from the price. It was $250 New Zealand for a one-day tournament. It's a two-day tournament that they put, one-day tournament they put over 2 days. They don't play much bridge here, not compared to New Zealand. We haven't played much bridge, just really, really expensive over here.
Okay.
I know over there they think we're crazy for the amount of bridge we play in a day. So how many boards a day were you playing in that congress you just talked about?
48.
48 boards.
Really?
Starting at 11 a.m. and finishing at 6 p.m. or something. Very, very relaxed.
So I'm sure if you told them we were playing 72 boards a day over here, they'd think
Is there a shortage of partners that you look for, or are you just picking up games anywhere?
Yeah, picking up games that I want to play or that people ask me for, I usually say yes. I don't really have any reason to say no, and I do like playing still. Not really actively looking for events here, especially at the cost they are.
So Louisville, what sort of schedule do they have, and what was the field like? You're playing against plenty of name players over there, I would guess.
Yeah, the schedule was 10 a.m. and 3 a.m., and I think they changed that recently from 1 p.m. and 7 p.m., and it's got half of the member base furious that they have to get up so early for 10 o'clock starts, which is very odd to me.
Crazy.
I really enjoy playing the Nationals, and all the top players are there, and like we played in the Platinum Pairs. It's a three-day pairs event, and they have cutoffs after every day, but the top half continue on. And day three is probably the strongest pairs event in the world, which we unfortunately didn't make. We got knocked out after day two. Still great to be there and play and be competitive.
You mentioned off here that you're traveling to New York.
Not for bridge. That's to meet up with Andy's parents.
Oh, right.
But we are going from New York to Paris to then play in the Winter Games.
So back to Louisville, the teams event, that was the Vanderbilt, was it?
Yep, that was the Vanderbilt. We were seeded 34th, I think, and so we played the 29th seed. And there were some really, really good foreign teams at 30th and 28th. So we managed to avoid both of those.
Well done.
Some seasoned Americans, which we played four sets of 15, weirdly enough. And we only won one of the sets, but we won it by a lot. So we managed to win the match by 5. And then we played the Rosenthal team the next day, which was Boy Broglund, Christian Bakker, Geir Haugamo.
Wow.
Chris Lincoln. And we were close for 3/4 of that match. We were down by 4 going into the last set, but we got blown out. A loss is a loss.
Yeah.
Pretty hot team, though. It's great fun to play against.
It's great to be close for three quarters of the match. Probably closer than a lot. We were, you know, just kind of a random team of friends and whatnot.
So one of my questions was, how are you preparing for Buenos Aires? Are you doing anything special?
We have a special situation, I think. That Michael Wibley plays in America with Nabil Edgton from Australia, and they actually play our system, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Historically, I've been better at remembering system than Michael anyway, but Michael is having so much more practice with it, and they get so many spots that come up that we then discuss as a triangle,
right.
Because any changes Nabil wants to make, I have to also learn, because it would be impossible for Wibley to play some things, some small differences with him and not with me.
Yeah.
So basically, just when they're playing in America, we're talking all the time about what bids should mean in certain spots and stuff. There's not so much we do with card play anymore, especially living in both different countries now, but we use BBO for bidding and all that still.
You're not actually playing the system much, but discussing it, I guess.
Discussing it, and I keep the system notes, so going through it a lot as well.
So when you and Andy play, what system do you play? Do you play that system as well?
No, we play a two-page, very simple, kind of a mix between what she plays with her parents and what I want to play. Kind of compromise somewhere in the middle. Very simple, very natural with Andy.
Some sort of standard or two over one?
Two over one.
Okay. And when you're playing in Louisville, two over one is pretty overwhelming, is it?
Yep. Standard American is not so standard anymore. 90% of the people we played would have been playing two over one. Very, very popular over there.
No echo players over there?
I did not encounter one.
There
not
you
one.
Go. Because wasn't the movement from Eckhold to Standard American, and now it looks like it's Standard American to 2-over-1 winning hands down.
Yeah, at some point it would have shifted from Standard American to 2-over-1 because it's very, very popular.
Okay. Mariana, I don't think anybody ever played Eckhold over there. We never have.
It's amazing that we teach it then. Like, maybe we should be looking at the way that we teach Eckhold over here and maybe switch it to another system. 2-over-1 does seem popular.
I believe they do teach 2-over-1 to their beginners over there, Matt. I don't know whether you know anything about that.
I really sort of heard that.
I don't know that for sure. I thought I'd heard somewhere that I was sort of a bit amazed that they were teaching 2-over-1 to beginners.
Got a question. Just give your view on what your tricks or skills are to winning at bridge.
Mainly just focus and so much counting all the time, double counting, triple counting. Even when I'm sure I've found the answer, just checking again and staying focused all the time of what I think is going on and what I think the clearer has or what I think the defenders have. Just always counting and always checking my counting is the biggest thing, I think. Playing with a good partner, you know, like Michael Wibley, is always really helpful, because if you are giving the wrong signal or something, then they'll believe you and you'll lose a game swing or something. And so it really teaches you not to be lazy as well, and just helps with that focus.
Barry will always say that he's a lazy player.
I am. I say to Mariana, if you ask for a tip, it's always, I just try not to stuff up the easy ones. That's my favorite. Yeah.
One of my problems that I'm trying to fix is that at times when I'm thinking between two suits of what to play, and I figure out it doesn't matter. And so after even 30 seconds of thought, which is still quite a long time at the bridge table, I'll play a card when I should have still thought about it more. And usually when I do this, I play the suit that gives away the contract rather than the one that actually I should be playing. So that's something I'm still working on to try and stop. Okay. Keep focused again.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite memory techniques that you use?
I don't really use any memory technique. I'm going to talk with Michael how we remember system, and I know we do it differently. For me, with our system, when I'm at the table, I remember reading the system on the page and where I was and where the system was on the page as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really photographic, but I kind of just remember the whole experience rather than just the thing. And so that's how I remember everything. But I know he doesn't do that. I don't know what he does.
Is that on a system, or is it about like just general principles that you have?
Principles as well. When
comes up,
when card play combinations come up as well, I sort of remember when something similar happened when I was in France or something. And I do that as well during the play.
My recollection is not that good. I can't even remember about the board that happened probably two boards ago. Barry's always like, can't you remember it? You just played it. I was like, no, it's gone. So that's something that I have to work on.
When we were in New Zealand in the Auckland's Easter Congress, I guess it was last year, and I thought it seemed so familiar to me to a hand that we'd played in 2017 in France at the World Championships. I had to check that it wasn't the same hand. And when we came out to score up, I was talking with Ashley Bark, and he said, was that the same hand as France 2017? So he's got a similar memory, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't know how he remembers things.
It's amazing.
We've just played the Easter Congress. By the way, Matt, 9:30 a.m. start and finishing after 6, every day. For anybody over there that's interested, I was dummy actually, but I watched this hand, and this person had a choice at trick 2 as to whether they should switch to a spud or a diamond, whatever they should do. And it took me a couple of days to figure it out. But it was obvious it had to be a club, because if you led a club and it was wrong, you'd get a chance to switch to a diamond, but the reverse didn't apply.
Right.
But at the table, it didn't. I didn't actually see that, and she never saw it. Most people didn't. Yeah. But 2 days later, it's obvious.
Yeah, it always is 2 days later.
I had another question about if you've got any tips for hand evaluation.
My biggest thing would be, I can't remember why I was there, but I was at the Auckland Club and Malcolm May was giving a talk about points in your long suits. King, queen, 10, small of hearts is so much better than king, queen by itself. I mean, that's just one trick, unless partner has the ace and you've got two tricks. If you've got points in your long suits, it's more likely to provide more tricks, even though we count it as the same points, 3 as a king, 2 for a queen. And so I never really thought about it before I heard this talk, but I realized that I've been doing that subconsciously for years, just appreciating points in my suits a lot more. I don't add any points or anything, but just kind of mentally I make a note. If partner asks if a minimum or maximum, or I'll show it as a good one or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
One of Malcolm's quotes that I always like on that theme is he always says, bridge is a game of tricks, not a game of points.
Very, very true.
Yeah, it's a very good comment.
So how long have you been playing bridge, Matt?
12 years now, I think. Oh, no, that's wrong, actually. 15.
15 years.
15 years. Longer than I haven't, which is very odd to think about.
How did you get dragged to the bridge club?
My mum forced me to.
Well,
she made me go to the bridge club to learn. And after 2 lessons, it was when you had to, you could pay to continue. You got the two free lessons. I don't know if they're still doing that. It was 15 years ago. But after 2 lessons, I said to mum, what's one no trump? How do I play this? What if I had this? And so I kept on with the lessons.
Yeah.
For the first
good.
2, I didn't have a choice.
Well, thanks, Tan, for bringing to the bridge club.
I remember, I think it was Ishmael saying, what to watch his father play. And he used to watch him doing stuff. And say, what did you do? Why would you do that? Why did you do that? Why did you do that? Why did you do that? And then after about a few months, you were saying, what did you do that for? What did you do that for? Rather than asking why, it was asking, why the hell would you ever do that?
No. I guess he probably said, here, look, you play it then.
Yeah. You probably didn't know Ishmael's dad, Matt, did you? Or you probably wouldn't.
Surely? No, I never met him. But I did see Ishmael over in America, actually. At the start of Louisville, there were big thunderstorms, and they cancelled all planes into Louisville on the night before.
Wow.
So Ishmael drove 12 hours through the night to get there, and he was falling asleep at the table in the Platinum Pairs, but they managed to qualify first anyway.
Oh. Well, the closest I got to thunderstorms was we were playing in the Gold Coast this year, and there was storms, and they cancelled all the planes. And they made an announcement that if you were catching a flight out to go and see Taylor Swift, tough luck. There was a story, wasn't there, that Ishmael's mum used to sit at the table knitting, waiting for him to play. Was that right? When he was a young
man?
That
could be true, but I don't know about that.
Before my time.
I do recall us doing a commentary on something or other on the Australian Bridge TV thing, and Ishmael was the other commentator. It's great when you've got Ishmael as the other commentator. You just sit there and you don't have to say anything. He's very entertaining. He's just got so many different views on basic things, which was much more entertaining than I'd ever be. He's great to have him on. I recommend him. If you've got a guest commentator, have Ishmael as the other one.
So when is the next tournament, other than Buenos Aires, are you actually going to get to play with Wibley?
We're looking at playing in the HCL tournament in India. It's got big money prizes, kind of the last one left. They really like foreign players coming over and strengthening their tournament. So usually if you're sort of well-respected, they'll pay for your accommodation and your entry fees. They really want the tough competition coming over.
Nice.
So hopefully we'll be playing that. And that's in three months.
3 months.
You've played this before, haven't you, Matt?
Yep, we played it twice. We played it in 2017 and we came fourth. And we played it last year. I played with Ashley, though, and Michael played with Nabil. And we blew a 35er bleed to lose in the round of eight, I think.
Such a life.
Yep.
Yeah. So when you're talking big money, man, have you got any idea what you can win this year?
First prize is usually about 16,000 New Zealand each.
Wow. Minus, how's that for prize money?
Minus 30% tax, I think you have to pay to the Indian government. Don't get that many other places.
What Hamilton pays. You know, you were saying that the bridge is pretty cash over there. Do they have bridge clubs in almost every area or not?
From what I hear, they've got heaps of bridge clubs in every city, just everywhere, all over the country. And I mean, at the Nationals, there were 6,500 tables across the week. Amazing numbers they get, but I mean, they are a huge country.
I saw that number of 6,300 or whatever the heck it was. I don't know how they count those even. I mean, I think they just totaled them all up. You know, how many are in play at the peak time? You got any idea? I mean, is there a room full of 2,000 tables or what do they have?
At once, I would guess 500 or 600 tables. And that the hotel it was at, they had that kind of spread across six huge rooms, sort of 100 tables each.
Oh, right.
So there's a lot of bridge going on and a lot of events. They're bracketed for the newer players and the welcome 0 to 200 master points. And they've got all sorts going on all the time. I think it's really well run, even if you're not a top bridge player, to go as a foreigner and go play.
It's really good.
It's a bit like the New Zealand Bridge Congress times six.
Yeah, basically. Events for everyone.
I read in Louisville about how many tables there were, and I thought, they must put them in like a big hangar, airport hangar. That would fit them. Yeah, but it makes sense. 100 tables in six rooms. Must be a pretty big hotel.
It was one hotel, but there were two towers, and they were joined by a sky bridge with a bar in the middle. So you can guess where the bridge players all went after bridge finished.
Yeah.
They had lots and lots of room. I think they could have had more, probably. It was really? The hotel was huge.
Nice.
Hey, is Andy going to Buenos Aires? Are we going to see her there?
We aren't sure. Probably, unless she finds a job or something serious. Hopefully she will get.
She'll have plenty of time to check out some of the steakhouses in Argentina. One thing I've noticed is they eat lots of meat. I've noticed that.
I've heard that. And we're going to get a tour around by Michael Wibbler, who's living in Argentina now. And he's said we could stay with him and whatnot. So
nice.
He'll show us the sights.
Yeah. Well, Barry's down at Pack and Save in the car park doing his car washing as his fundraiser to get to Buenos Aires.
Yeah, right. So is Michael, he's not living in Buenos Aires. What part of Argentina is he in? Or is he living in? He is living in Buenos Aires.
He is in Buenos Aires. Yeah.
Oh, that's a bonus.
Very handy.
Yeah. Okay. So he probably planned that, right?
Well, everyone always says that. He went and played in the South Americans about a year ago. They went hiking for a week before, and he just loved the country. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
And he was thinking of moving to Mexico at some point, but it was too isolated from everyone and everything. So changed mind to Argentina after his event there.
Barry, you got any other questions?
I'm just wondering whether Wibbly's, you know, has he started playing polo while he's over there? I'm a bit interested in that.
I think he plays basketball. You know,
what does he play?
He always talks to me in Spanish now, and I don't understand.
Oh, God.
His Spanish is pretty good, is it?
Yeah.
Although really? You probably wouldn't know.
No. He says it's good, I'll believe.
You'll have to brush up then. Hey, you know, like at the table, it's English. Is it ever a problem when they don't speak English when you're planning
no,
this?
No, I mean, especially at the top level, they all sort of know English and all know the rules enough not to speak. I think I've only had it once recently. I think it was in America where a Chinese gentleman didn't know English. And so they had to get someone over to translate from another table what he wanted to say to the director. Apart from that, mostly everyone speaks English.
And are you getting pinged for having a Kiwi accent?
All the time.
Really?
Especially in America, in the South, where they have the big drawl and they say, y'all, how are y'all?
Or yeah.
They always notice and say, you're not from around here, are you?
So no. No, I'm not.
I was reading something on Bridge Winners. They were talking about bridge podcasts. And one American guy said that he listened to the Bridge Zone occasionally because he just liked to listen to the accent.
Really? Well, I hope Andy gets better.
Yeah.
He'll have to take over the chief cook and bottle washing duties.
Yep.
All the best. And you'll get to see Barry in Buenos Aires. And if you ever keen for a catch
up. Yeah, and just tell Andy she's in charge of checking out the steakhouses in Buenos Aires. I want to know what about.
That might get her moving.
No, I appreciate your time, Matt. That's brilliant.
Yep, cool.
Thanks for that. Yep. Back to bed.
Enjoy. See you later. And we'll see you again. Werewolves of London was a pretty cool song back in 1978, written and sung by Warren Zevon.
Coming up next, we're heading off to the courthouse. Director, please.
How can I help?
Judge Julie presiding.
Another week with Judge Julie. Welcome.
Hi.
What a beautiful day it was today.
Yeah, it was actually. Wonderful. Lots of dry clothes.
That's a waste of 20 seconds of the 4 minutes, isn't it?
Talking isn't about it?
Right. The question today is, there are some things that the director is all powerful and people cannot even appeal these decisions, Julie. Is that true?
You're not allowed to appeal a direct decision that is made in law. So if you do something wrong and there is a law about it, that cannot be appealed.
Like a revoke, for instance.
Well, revoke, actually, I was thinking revoke, but there's some situations where it comes down to judgment. You can appeal the director's judgment, okay? So if there is a revoke and you get penalised 2 tricks, you won the revoke trick and your side won subsequent tricks, the law says you lose 2 tricks. There is no appeal against that. That is written in the law. Some of the time you could lose more tricks to restore equity for your opponents, and that would be judgment, and that would be appealable. But you cannot say, oh, this is way too harsh. The law is picking on me. I don't want this to happen. That ain't going to happen. And so if the director makes a ruling based on law, like penalty card or things like that, where it is what the law says and the director is only applying the law, you cannot appeal it. If you absolutely insist, maybe the director will give way, maybe you will get penalised 30% or something rather spectacular for wasting the appeal committee's time, or maybe you'll get charged a fair amount of money to have the appeal, and then you won't get it back. But when it's the director's judgment, that is appealable. And when the director applies procedural penalties, these will be around slow play, wrong number of cards on the board because you haven't counted them back in, things like that, they can be appealed, but they are really high-risk appeals. If you appeal a slow play penalty, for example, you would have to have really solid grounds where the appeal committee didn't double it because you've just wasted their time. If I'm chasing people around the room and they are slow and the director penalises them, it would be really unusual for an appeal committee to reverse it. It is possible. If a director penalised you 15% of your score, which would be a truly excessive penalty, unless there's a very good reason for it, then you might appeal it and the appeal committee might consider modifying it. If it's a disciplinary penalty, where the director says this is because rude to the director, various things for disciplinary, you cannot appeal a disciplinary penalty either. So you can appeal the director's judgment.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, I know we haven't got much time, but I got one more question on sort of on the same subject. So this money that you pay, when you have to pay a deposit to appeal, you have to pay an amount to appeal, whatever that amount might be. Mariana knows I'll be interested in this. What happens to that money if it's forfeited? Do the directors go down the pub or what?
No, not that I've ever noticed. In general, you get forfeited, you will be penalised percentage or VPs, simply because money has a problem where it has different value to different people. So what might seem a small amount for some is a huge amount for other people. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, but it does signify if you're going to appeal a decision through to New Zealand Bridge, you will find that you have to pay, I think it's a $25 fee at the moment that will be refunded unless the appeal committee decide that it's frivolous.
That's the question. That's the question. Where does it go?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I've never seen that happen. I have seen someone suffer rather hugely for appealing something and being penalised a certain amount for a frivolous appeal where they got penalised a VP or something and ended up not qualifying in the top 16 of the New Zealand teams. All right?
Yes.
But I have never seen anything about where money was kept in the time that I've been a director, which is quite a substantial amount of time, really.
Mm.
The fact that Probably in pounds back then, Mariana.
I'm not talking to you, Barry.
Oh, that's brilliant. Okay.
Thank you, Julie.
You.
Okay.
And we'll catch you next week.
Radio. That's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang.
Do you want to hear a sob story? Barry's been given some homework. It's a bit tough being in the mixed teams, heading off to Buenos Aires. You have to do all this pre-work. It's going to keep him a busy boy. Don't know when he's going to be able to find the spare time to do it, but here we go.
I've been working.
You've been working?
I've got a worksheet. So the non-playing captain of the mixed teams has sent me, I asked for some of this, mind you, so he sent me a worksheet. And it's about high-level competition. I guess everybody could do this. He's got these questions. He says, please write down what you think each of the following bids shows. And do so without discussion with partner and then compare answers. It gives you these bidding sequences and asks you what double would mean, what pass would mean, what a bid would mean, what a new suit would mean, what a Q-bid would mean. And he then says, it is not enough to just do this exercise, but when you do agree, add it to your system note.
Oh, how cool.
There's a lot to do. There's pages and pages of this stuff.
How many pages?
Well, there's 26 items
for
us to look at. Even just this one page, I have to answer about 20-something questions on the first page.
Are you allowed to share it? Can you send it to me so I can have a look?
I can send it to you. It's not a secret. It's an interesting thing to do, to go through with your regular partner and see if you're on the same wavelength on these things.
How cool is that?
The one I'm working on at the moment is high-level competition. The next one is about your doubling style. And the next one is about interference over stamen and transfers. So it's
you'll have an answer for all of that, won't you?
Well, at high level, it's actually does get a little bit complicated.
Oh, way past my pay grade, but I'll be interested to have a look.
I will send you the 26 items, and I expect you to have answered them all by next week.
Listeners, we'll let you know how we're going. What a hoot. That sounds like a lot of fun.
I don't know about fun. It's actually quite hard work, and it's going to be very interesting when I get to compare with Jenny to see what her answers are compared to mine.
Oh, that'll be great. We'll give an update on this worksheet that he's got next week. All right, we'll catch up with you next week.
Okay, bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring Bridge from beginner to international, nationwide.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.